Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's new Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson, coming from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs, as we podcast on the new Cyber Frontier. Today's guest is Mr. John Grigg. He has spent a good portion of his life in Marine Corps cyber. So, John, it is a delight to have you on board. How's it going?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I appreciate the invite. I'm very honored to be here.
Indeed. Well, we're honored to have you. Of course, you've got some diverse background in there, and I'll let you get into that. How did you kind of arrive at this space as a cyber guy, especially out of the Marine Corps?
Hurrah, first of all. So my career has been a very interesting journey. I started out, believe it or not, at a very young age. My dad brought a computer home, taught me how to program before hard drives existed.
Wow.
So my first computer was a Honeywell with 2 8-inch floppy drives.
boys and girls, floppy drives were actually what we used to use to store information on. Okay.
I kind of grew up with the industry. I've always had an interest in computers since then. I went to a technical vocational high school in Massachusetts. It's called Joseph B. Keefe Tech. My high school diploma is actually in information technology.
Excellent.
So then from there, I took the summer off and I tried going to college. Didn't really agree with me. It's just, I don't know, maybe I'm just a boneheaded, hard-headed adult. I ended up joining the Marine Corps because discipline, I figured, give me some discipline and go on with life. I did about 4.5 years active duty. I extended my contract because Iraq was going on and went on another deployment. I was a small computer system specialist. And that was the time when they transitioned into tactical data network specialist. So I kind of had that infrastructure hardware background mixed with the network routing and switching and WAN connections, satellite connections, and things like that. Got into the very technical side of things. Then as I was overseas, I ended up having to set up morale nets, which put me into web cameras and Segovia IP phones and all of those other fun things. And then I kind of grew from that. I got out of the Marine Corps. I tried sales for a while. I did some business technology solution stuff with Best Buy. I segued back into IT at Universal Technical Institute, and where I got into some of the security policy side of things, setting up controls on networks and especially the student networks. Students sure. love to mess with machines. I ended up setting up their security policy, their initial security policy and posture for the student network to prevent the students from any malicious or usually unintended malicious sure. activity.
Sure.
I came back into the Marine Corps, had a couple kids, and I got laid off. So Marine Corps was hiring. I went back to the Marine Corps. During my time in the Marine Corps, I was active reserve, so I kind of got some of that reserve side and some of the active duty side. I learned quite a bit. I had the opportunity to run some Toys for Tots campaigns and get some operational experience.
Sure.
The entire time I was building networks, tearing it down, training Marines, the subject of cybersecurity and how do we secure this information space and how do we see the enemy without them seeing us in the cyberspace environment. These questions kept coming up in one form or another in all of the operational planning. And so I started paying more and more attention to it. And as I paid more and more attention to it, I started having more and more conversations with fellow Marines. And I haven't actually written any papers because I'm terrible at writing. But I have sat down and discussed concepts and gone through some of that operational planning process to consider those things. And then I got the opportunity while I was in New York to serve as the interim chief executive officer for a friend's company. He was going through his time and had some stuff he had to deal with. And so I got to sit in his chair and kind of run the company. And that was probably the most eye-opening experience of my life.
Digital Sciences Corporation.
Yes.
What a diverse background and foundation here, John. Let's take a quick break and go listen in on our sponsors.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back with New Cyber Frontier. I'm Abe Thompson from the Secure Set Studios here in Colorado Springs. We have the privilege of having Mr. John Grigg, as he's spent a good portion of his life as a Marine Corps cyber guy, but has had some diverse experience. And you were just talking about having had the opportunity to sit in as an interim CEO at a company in New York. What was that like?
That was a so it's a digital sciences corporation, so it's very tech heavy. And I learned a great deal about how IT contributes to business. And I think that's one thing that cybersecurity is actually lacking in the global infrastructure is, we do offer a huge set of benefits and cost savings to organizations. Most of the business world sees us as a cost incurrence. Right. They don't understand, we do a bad job as a community of expressing to business the value of cybersecurity outside of insurance.
Right.
Most of the time we get looked at like an insurance policy. Sure. How do I cut it down to the bare bones minimum? Yeah. So that I'm covered, but you know, I don't want to expend resources on this in this area. And I think if we articulated the value and we focused just a little bit more on the availability, you know, piece of the triad, we might actually be able to, it requires a partnership with the COO and the CEO and the CIO to actually build that.
Could you imagine if the Marine Corps or the Navy ran things that way and kind of, you know, did the bare minimum to conduct the mission and protect our forces? I don't think a lot of folks on the ground would be too pleased with that operation. And, you know, we come from a battle mindset, a defense mindset, and it sounds like you're advocating that we kind of wake up to, you know, like the military has in bringing U.S. Cyber Command to the table. We now have, you know, the cyber guys are on equal footing with the pilots and the ship drivers and the infantry guys. So, you know, that's a big move. And it sounds like that's kind of part of your voice in cybersecurity and what you want to get out there.
Absolutely. It's definitely a portion of it. I think as a community, I don't have the answers. Sure. I'll be the first one to tell you. The more I learn about cybersecurity, the more I know I don't know. But it's definitely something that is worth having the conversation. It's worth taking the second to go, you know, how do we do this? We in industry, we sit down and we say, how do we build this building safely? Well, a virtual network is basically a building or a city or a roadmap that has to be built safely. Yeah. It has to have lanes. It has to have, you know, all of those different things. And I know at the Black Hat conference, they talked, there was a talk about how cybersecurity is not like the real world. I would actually conversely that it is. Yeah. It very much is. You know, a router is a bus stop on the road.
Yeah.
A packet is a car on the road, or a frame, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The you know, if we start doing, Solomon said, "There's nothing new under the sun."
Yeah.
And he wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion. And I think we need to recognize that, and we need to start drawing the corollaries.
Sure.
That and bringing the wisdom of millennia
yeah.
to the cyber frontier, and saying, no pun intended,
yeah.
and saying, okay, well, how does this relate to the real world? If somebody walks up to me and punches me in the face, no one would dispute my right to defend myself.
Correct.
Why then do you dispute my right to defend myself from a hack or from a incursion into my personal network?
Yeah, we need to put skin on, you know, the virtual world again here. And it's interesting you talk about the wisdom of millennia. Of course, Solomon has the market cornered as, you know, one of the wisest leaders ever. You know, that was a special gift from God. But in IO, we study, you know, Sun Tzu even. And he didn't have a computer in front of him, but the principles are still the same. You know, we look at here at SecureSet when we teach our kiddos on strategy and planning, and you know, we're looking at Clausewitz, Sun Tzu, some of these other strategies and strategists that way predated computers, and yet truth is truth, principles are principles, and you're really onto something there.
Oh yeah, I think that's the conversation that the community needs to be having, though. Is, you know, I'm actually working on a paper with some friends right now. We're working on ethics in cybersecurity. Because I don't feel like enough people are talking about exactly those things, is, you know, as you said, putting some skin on it. And I think we spend a lot of time worrying more about governance than we are about government.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think some of the policies that, some of the conflict that we're seeing multinationally and multilaterally across the globe is the differences of opinion and leadership. You know, in the United States, I can build my network. I can have my network. It's not a big deal. You can't come into my router unless I let you into my router. And then if I stop you, I can put a firewall on it. I can do all kinds of things to prevent access to my information. But you go to China and you can't do that.
Right.
You know, it's illegal. The government has access to everything.
Right.
And those are two very different mindsets that we have to balance in the virtual world. And I think the sooner that we start looking at the virtual world as an overlay of the physical world, the sooner we can get to a point where we can say, okay, here's where right is right and wrong is wrong. Here's where the international waters are. Here's where, you know, and here are the rules of the international waters in the virtual world.
Yeah, and still just walking around pretending like we just invented the internet, you know, we invented this new technology. It's really going back to the basics. What an interesting call out. Now, interestingly enough, though, you've got that other component juxtaposed against the draconian sort of communist mindset, the sort of the free enterprise mindset in America, and then the GDPR and what's going on in Europe. What do you see of the GDPR and how that's being implemented in Europe and how it kind of fits into?
Honestly, I think they're both behind us and ahead of us.
Yep.
And I say that I understand the paradox of it.
Sure.
They're ahead of us with the whole GDPR because they have given their citizens the right to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. There was a time when, you know, before the internet, before, you know, information technology and hard drives and data governance and all of these different things, that if I left a town and I never went back, eventually they just forgot I ever existed. You know, I could go and I could start my life over.
Sure.
Somewhere else. In the modern times, that is much harder to do with things like Facebook, right, without shutting down my entire life and then moving and then starting all over again.
I would hate to work in witness protection these days.
I know, right? But with the advent of the right to be forgotten in Europe and kind of the imposition of that on American companies, I don't know if you're aware but there's it superseded, what was that, the Safe Harbor Treaty? I think it was that superseded
okay.
the the GDPR. So under the Safe Harbor Treaty, we had this kind of agreement between EU and US, and kind of we had these the same level of laws with the GDPR that nullified the Safe Harbor and forced US companies to adopt even those policies in the United States.
Yeah, which is difficult at best, I think.
Oh, it was. It's super difficult. That's why every time you go to a website now, it's saying, hey, we use cookies. Do you allow us to use cookies? Cookie Monster's very happy.
Indeed. Let's take another quick break and go hear from our sponsors.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Back on New Cyber Frontier. This is Abe Thompson coming to you from the SecureSat Studios here in Colorado Springs. We're blessed to have on with us Mr. John Grigg. John, we were just talking about these global sort of thought systems and how they're kind of all in different places with regard to implementing cybersecurity and principles there. And you know, we just kind of finished talking about the imposition that GDPR is on a lot of U.S. companies. Is there a legal ramification? I mean, what types of legislation are you interested in this sphere?
So the United States really needs to put its thinking cap on, and I honestly don't necessarily know what Congress is already doing, because you know, does anybody? But the I would like to see Congress, you know, take a step back. I would like to see them come together. I think everybody would like to see them come together. Yeah. I would like to see them come together. And I think cybersecurity is something they can come together on. I think most people enjoy their right to privacy. I think most people would agree that the foundational rights that are granted to us in the U.S. Constitution should be protected in the cyber world as much as they are in the physical world. And I think with things like the Patriot Act, and I think we've gone the wrong direction. We allow, the Patriot Act allows the allows government agencies to collect information on people without them knowing. And I believe personally that that's a Fourth Amendment violation. You know, but because it's cyber, somehow it doesn't apply. That doesn't compute in my mind.
Rights are rights, whatever the space you're in, virtual or otherwise, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, I don't mean to get religious, but I think this was covered. You know, a book that's been around for 8,000 years has to have some value to society.
Hear, hear.
I personally ascribe to the Bible, and I think it was covered when Jesus looked at people and was like, listen, you know, if you've sinned in your heart, you've sinned. So when he says that, he's talking that if you act in the virtual space, yeah, then you have acted in the physical space.
What a brilliant connection. Yeah, very true.
So you kind of have to take the good with the bad. I get that. We're really in a struggle right now for the soul of America. Are we going to become a police state and allow our nation and our government to overreach what our founding fathers set up? Or are we going to check the government as citizens, and we're going to put legislators in place that are going to address these issues, that are going to tackle them head on, and that are going to say, hey, look, no, fair is fair, right is right. It doesn't matter where you are or what you've done as much as it matters, you know, what the motivation is and that we're doing the right thing. Well, now, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, some might say, though, doesn't it just depend on who holds the keys to power? You know, if there's an ethical, you know, sort of right-thinking entity that holds the keys to power, then maybe some of those government intrusions aren't bad, is what some might say, versus if you know, a despot or a, you know, a dictator or, you know, someone with nefarious intent holds the keys to power, then it becomes a greater problem. Or is this bigger than that?
It's bigger than that. I think when you look at it that way, and you can't, if the good guy can do it, then the bad guy can do it. Yeah. And if we are going to stop the bad guy from doing it, and we are all equal under the law, and this law is the thing that we are going to say everybody's equal under, and that is what rules us.
The rule of law.
Then we have to say the good guy can't do it too. Gotcha. And I think that's where we fail to realize people aren't going to be as excited about it or as angry about it when the good guy's doing it because he's doing it for them. But at the same time, they have to recognize as a population that even though the good guy can do it and do it for us, that means the bad guy can do it too.
Yeah.
We have to operate from the same rules.
Take it out of the realm of the political and put it back into the realm of the constitutional.
Yes, the constitutional and the moral.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was John Adams that said that our government was set up for a moral and religious people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it won't work for anybody else. And that's very true. Our laws are not written for immoral people. They're written for moral people, people who care about the law.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I think we need to get back to the basics is really what it comes down to. Matter of fact, I'm actually working, this is how much I adhere to this. I have a IEEE cybersecurity group that I go meet with here in New Orleans, and I'm doing a presentation on the original OSI model. And how it relates. That's how, because
Be
I was having conversations.
My heart. Be still my heart.
I was having conversations, and a lot of these guys, they know what it is, but they don't understand it. And I think when we get back to that, we can start understanding what really is troubleshooting.
Sure.
You know, why does it matter that we do these things, and how do they work?
How does that resonate? You know, when you're trying to basically reintroduce the basics in a case like that.
You know, there, of course, there are the prideful who, you know, they don't want to hear it. What I try to do is I try to make it new and exciting. I go, hey, we're going to look at this. It's back to the basics. It's the foundation. But we're going to look at this in context of the pyramid we built on top. And, you know, when you give them that perspective of we're not just looking at the foundation to look at the foundation.
Yeah.
We're looking at the foundation to understand how the pyramid is built. Like another project I hope to work on, and I've been having the conversations, is secure information transfer. I was talking to some colleagues and some friends about it, and I would like to see a rewrite of how information is sent from point A to point B.
Sure.
And right now, of course, it's the frame, the packet, and all that. But you know, what happens if you introduce a logic bomb with the frame inside that packet, and you say, if you're not the intended recipient, the frame self-destructs.
Sure. Have you heard of BotDoc?
BotDoc? No, I have not.
Yeah, that sounds similar to a technology I know they're using. You know, where they're sending this thing, like doing mortgage paperwork or something like this, and they're transmitting it, and it's perishable. So it gets it once it's authenticated to the right receiver, then the information is held and kept, but then the transmission and everything surrounding it kind of disappears. So if you don't download it, if you don't download it appropriately when you receive it, as in terms of secure information transfer, then it goes away. Sounds interesting. I'd be intrigued on your opinion about it. It's called BotDoc, I believe.
I'll have to look it up and shoot you an email. The I would like to do research before I give an opinion.
Exactly, and that's kind of what I'm wondering. Love to hear insight after a look at something like that, because that's kind of what I heard they're up to.
Yeah, the conversations I was having were more around information security for banks, for government institutions. Like if I'm on a secure network and I don't want anybody else to get this traffic, and I do, and we create some new hardware that can not only encrypt the traffic, but also sends a, I guess, an electromagnetic pulse back on the line, it to wipe out the frame if you're not the intended recipient.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, I'm talking physical layer, data link layer type logic bomb. How do you do that?
Sure, sure. That sounds more cool, of course. But
yeah, and how do you do it without damaging the hardware? Because you can't damage somebody else's hardware, because then you have committed a crime.
Yeah, there'd have to be some, again, legal infrastructure around it and whatnot for sure. Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool concept. I honestly had no intent of bringing it up here, but you know, whatever.
It's interesting, but you know, moral framework, you know, sort of the rule of law. These are all things that we hold very dear, obviously, here in the United States, and of course, this is a global podcast, and I know there's people around the world that hold those things dear as well. And so, what is your challenge then to those of us out here that want to contribute to that conversation, getting back to the basics?
Honestly, I think it starts at home. Mm-hmm. The first thing we have to do is we have to analyze ourselves, and we have to decide where we stand. Because I've met a lot of people in the cyber community that, you know, some people, I mean, there are still those of us who do it for the lulz. I get that. I'm one of them. But at the end of the day, there's, we've got to look at ourselves and decide where we stand on an issue. Yeah. And then we've got to stop being afraid of having the argument. Mm-hmm. Argument has to stop being a bad word.
Yeah.
And I think if we have a difference of opinion, that is okay.
Yeah.
That is a good thing.
Conflict we need is to, healthy. Yeah.
Yes. As long as it's not violent.
Right.
When it turns vitriolic and violent, that's when the conflict becomes unhealthy.
Well, unfortunately, it turns vitriolic and violent way too soon. People don't even engage the critical thinking part before they have the conversation. I mean, we can say all the things about the decline of Greek society, but one of their heydays, one of their great strengths was the apologia, the argument, and the defense of it, and the public discourse, which was so rich and from which we got such great sort of heritage. You know, even you talk about sort of the religious implication where the Apostle Paul went into the Areopagus there and engaged, you know, the great thinkers of culture, but it was a very diplomatic and a very cordial interaction for her.
Absolutely. And I think we need to get back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you do it?
So I think it starts with forums and conversations with these meetup groups that, you know, happen around the country. I think it starts with, it starts with at home. Making the decision that I'm not going to hate somebody because they disagree with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then going out and having the conversation, finding people that disagree with you, and then having that conversation. And maybe it opens your eyes to a different way of thinking.
Yeah.
Maybe you open their eyes to a different way of thinking.
Well, you have to be careful, John, because this wisdom could be applied outside of the cybersecurity community. I mean, could you imagine? You know, people talking to each other, and you know, kumbaya would actually be a normal thing. I
mean, that would be crazy. I would actually like to see that, but I mean, that was what colleges were originally intended for.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened. I honestly don't know what happened.
Sure.
But it used to be you went to college to exchange ideas.
Yeah.
The undergraduate degree wasn't just, you know, here, turn this paper in, read this book, turn this paper in. It was, you know, hey, read this book and then tell me what you learned from it. Tell me what you think about it.
Sure.
And then the grade wasn't about whether or not you you agreed with the teacher or the community. The grade was about, did you understand the concept?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, outside of math and some sciences, the hard sciences, you know, it doesn't matter. 1 + 1 is always going to be 1, 0. There's a little binary joke for you. At the end of the day, that value of 1, 0, whether it's 2 or dose or whatever mnemonic you put on it, it's still that many. And it's understanding that, you know, mnemonics don't necessarily have to match, as long as the value of what is said can be reached and we can get back to that point. I think it's going to really require a cultural shift where we all have to take the onus upon ourselves to get out of our shells, to get out of out from behind our computer screens, and, you know, go out into public and actually, you know, start talking, not talking at people, but talking to people.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for computer people sometimes, sure. Especially yeah. guys like me who I much prefer to sit and, you know,
and taking your analogy even further, not just talking to, but talking with. That is a conversation, and that occurs. You know, ladies and gentlemen, John has kind of thrown down the gauntlet for us here in the cybersecurity community. He's called us back to civil discourse. Imagine that. So that we can flesh out some of these differences. So we can actually make progress rather than be blowhards and, you know, the folks that are always right. Could you imagine an approach that allow us to come to the table with differences, work through this internationally? He's calling us back to the basics of cybersecurity as well. John, really appreciated the time. Thank you so much for coming on. Hey,
can I give you one more thing?
Yeah.
The IEEE community. Do you know what 802.1 is? It's an RFC. Do you know what RFC stands for? Request for comment.
Imagine that.
Yes. So I mean, it really is getting back to the basics. I just wanted to leave you with that. It's nothing new under the sun.
what a beautiful end. Thank you so much, John. And thank you to all of you out there in podcast world. This is Abe Thompson coming to you from the SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. Good day, and have a
thanks great so much for having me on.
Of course, take care.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.